हरि ओम सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सति गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
ओके Chapter 40, I mean, page 47, chapter 19. Lord Vamanadeva begs charity from Bali Maharaj. Pratigya. The aim of the Varnashram divisions is to train one to control the senses and to be content with the bare necessities. Because even the entirety of whatever there may be within the three worlds to satisfy one's senses cannot satisfy a person whose senses are uncontrolled. That's the reason. So, we can say is, no, but what about, you know, engaging the senses? The point is, if your senses aren't controlled, doesn't matter how much engagement of the senses are there, you cannot satisfy someone whose senses aren't controlled. So someone who controls the senses can actually satisfy his senses. Someone who's not controlled in the senses, you can never do. So therefore, the only ones that can be successful are those who control their senses. So the Vedic system is therefore how to control the senses. But then, chairman's not here. So. Okay. Although powerful kings like Maharaj Prithu and Maharaj Gaya achieved proprietorship over the seven dvipas, they could not achieve satisfaction or find the end of their ambitions. Udaharana. So the point is here you have great persons and all that, and so as an example, they couldn't. Right? And the Vaishnava philosophy recommends Yukta Vairagya. It is not that all attention should be diverted for the maintenance of the body, but at the same time, one's bodily maintenance should not be neglected. So it's engaged, but it doesn't become the main focus, right? As soon as it's the main focus, then there's a problem. But you're taking care of Krishna consciousness. It's not that the bodily necessities are neglected. Right? Yeah. When the senses are engaged in devotional service to Hrishikesh, then the senses are completely satisfied. So, that's the whole point. You have to control such great personalities who are so powerful, they couldn't control. But how is it? By engaging in devotional service. Then, hence, one who is satisfied by that which is obtained by destiny is fit for liberation from this material existence. So that's your conclusion. So, if whatever comes by just the performance of your work and you're satisfied with that, that's then how you can be actually freed from material existence. Adhyaya Prakashika. This 19th chapter describes how Lord Vamanadeva asked for 3 paces of land in charity, how Bali Maharaj agreed to his proposal, and how Shukracharya forbade Bali Maharaj to fulfill Lord Vamanadeva's request. So that's the dynamics. He asked for it, Bali Maharaj agrees, and Shukracharya says no. Right? Yeah. But so technically that's means Vamanadeva's plan is 2 things. One, Bali Maharaj will become, a great Vaishnava and celebrate in the world for his devotion because of this. And at the same time, he'll break the strength of the demigods because their material strength for fighting and their prowess was coming from the blessings of Shukracharya and his juniors based on that principle, right, the material principle. But as soon as he switches from material to spiritual, then he doesn't have the support of Shukracharya, so that means then that material power will disappear. So the demigods will be able to come back into his place. So one can think that, okay, he tricked them, he lost out, and now he's gotten less. Yes, it was a trick on the material platform, but what does he gain instead? he gains, advancement on the spiritual platform, much greater gain. So Indra got back the heavenly planets, and Bali Mars gets the spiritual world. Right? Again, like Indra and Dhritarasura, right? He wins the battle and stays here, and Dhritarasura goes back to Godhead. And not only that, Bali will be the next Indra. So he also gets that. Well, Indra only gets to be Indra. Right? So, yeah. Yes.
I mentioned that he will go to spiritual world.
No, I'm saying he got the spiritual world by becoming a pure devotee. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, just a little work as Indra and then back. Yeah, because on that time over there, it'll be like a sneeze, like that. Come down, do it, come back, somebody will be, just 1 minute like that, then you go off, be Indra, and come back, oh, here it is, and then you're still sitting there, so, it's not a problem. When Bali Maharaj, thinking Vamanadeva to be the son of a Brahmana, told him to ask for anything he liked, means he was the son of a Brahmana, but he wasn't dealing as if he's the Supreme Lord. So when he's calling him, oh Lord, he means Brahmins are the lords of the Kshatriyas. Okay. Lord Vamanadeva praised Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha for their heroic activities. And after thus praising the family in which Bali Maharaj had been born, he begged the king for 3 paces of land. Bali Maharaj agreed to give this land in charity, since this was very insignificant. But Sukracharya, who could understand that Vamanadeva was Vishnu, the friend of the demigods, forbade Bali Maharaj to give this land. Sukracharya advised Bali Maharaj to withdraw his promise. Right? The point is, he'd already made the promise. It wasn't that I figured out beforehand and told him, hey, I think this is the trick. It's that after having made his promise, then he told him, don't give the promise. Because for Kshatriyas, that's the difference. The Kshatriyas, he gives the promise, and even though by giving that, he will lose out. That's just the way Kshatriyas are. Someone like Duryodhana, that's another thing. He's just, bad. He knows the technical aspects of how to be a Kshatriya, and he can do those quite well. Right? No, so comparable on Emperor of the World technique he has. So he has that skill. But as far as the character goes, it's not actually very ideal. So the point is, it's just like Karna would be a better example. He has his own armor. He has, he has that armor, and so then he can't be killed. So then by losing that armor, then he's now able to be killed. But because he promised to give anything to a Brahmin, even though he knows it's a trick, like he finds out it's Krishna, but he gives it anyway. Right? That's Kshatriyas. So this whole idea is, no, we get together, have meetings, we manage, we politic and all that. That's not Kshatriyas. Kshatriyas may also do that, but doing that doesn't make you Kshatriyas. You know what I'm saying? A little martial arts, you can, like this. That doesn't make you a Kshatriya. Does that make sense? That's the whole thing, is that it has to be understood as it's more than just that. It's about that he gave his word, therefore he must follow that, even if it means his loss. Because for a Kshatriya, his word is more valuable than the kingdom. Because if he doesn't keep his word, who will ever trust him again? And that's the whole thing. How will the people feel protected if the king doesn't keep his word? Does that make sense? So this is very unique here. Like that. That's why using corporate methods and saying it's administration, it doesn't have anything to do with each other. Techniques may look the same, but the difference is everybody's doing some kind of management. Everybody does management, and then many do administration. Right? But the point is that, let's say in a corporation, let's say they make a deal, but if they find out they won't make as much profit from this deal, if someone comes along with a better offer, they'll break that and take the better. Right? So that's business. That's economics. But the Kshatriya, even though he's given, if he's promised, then even though it may not be good or there's something better, he won't change it. That's how you tell the difference. Does that make sense? So that's why this whole concept of corporate management being administrative, that's not. It is for business, right? Does that make sense? But for society, it's not. You can apply it to business, but business is only a small portion, right? It's only the economic portion of Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha. So it's only dealing with Artha, right? Does that make sense? And it's not even ethical to break like that, but whatever it is, it's for business, so therefore it is ethical, right? It's the ethics of business. Does that make sense? It's not the ethics of, you know, giving your word and everything like that. Does that make sense? So it's taken that it's a bigger picture, it's a practice, but it's not the same, it's different. So, okay.
Is this because the Kshatriyas are on the Manumay platform, the Dharma platform, and
Yes. Corporates
are on a Pranamay?
Basically, that's where the occupation lies. It means as devotees, then they're all above that. But the point is in the occupation, that's where it lies. So the more one's affected by one's nature, then one might show other qualities. But if you bring it up to the devotional, they're more advanced, then you won't see those. Does that make sense? Yeah. You know, just like Yudhishthira Maharaj, his devotional qualities in that were so great that Karna wouldn't fight with him because he said he's a Brahmin, not a Kshatriya. Right? You know. Does that make sense? So the point is, devotees can act, because they're devotees, they can act above. But occupationally, then you have to make decisions what's going to be proper for that. Does that make sense? Yeah. He explained that in subduing others, in joking, in responding to danger, in acting for the welfare of others, and so on, one could refuse to fulfill one's promise, and there would be no fault. Right. So in other words, it is the standard way of doing things. But we see generally Kshatriyas don't not do that. But it's not that if they do, it's against the rules. Right? Subduing others, you know, you say one thing, do something else, in joking, responding to danger, right? In acting for the welfare of others, you may have promised something, but it's not going to work out for the others, so therefore you may go back on it because it's not for their benefit. Because you say, oh no, you know, I won't break my word, but then all these other people will suffer because of that. Does that make sense? So it can be done, but that's the political aspect of it. Right? So that's the artha aspect of it, or niti aspect of it. But on the Dharma platform, then, which Bali Maharaj and these other personalities work, they won't do that. But if they do in these conditions, it's not considered wrong. Okay. By this philosophy, Shukracharya tried to dissuade Bali Maharaj from giving land to Lord Vamanadev. Shloka Anusharana. 1-15. Lord Vamanadev praises Bali Maharaj's lineage. 16-29, Lord Vamanadeva's instructions on charity and satisfaction. Verses 30-43, Sukracharya's advice to Bali Maharaj. Is this the last chapter here? Okay, it is. 1-15, Lord Vamanadeva praises Bali Maharaj's lineage. Sukadeva Goswami said, when the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vamanadeva, heard Bali Maharaj speaking in this pleasing way, he was very satisfied. For Bali Maharaj had spoken in terms of religious principles. Thus the Lord began to praise him. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O King, you are indeed exalted because your present advisors are the Brahmins who are descendants of Bhrigu, because your instructor for your future life is your grandfather, the peaceful and venerable Prahlad Maharaj. Your statements are very true. And they completely agree with the religious etiquette. They are in keeping with the behavior of your family, and they enhance your reputation. Srila Prabhupada comments, Prahlad Maharaj is a vivid example of a pure devotee. Someone might argue that since Prahlad Maharaj, even though very old, was attached to his family, and specifically to his grandson Bali Maharaj, how could he be an ideal example? Therefore, this verse uses the word prashanta. A devotee is always sober. He is never disturbed by any conditions. Even if a devotee remains in grihastha life and does not renounce material possessions, he should still be understood to be prashanta, sober, because of his pure devotion to the Lord. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore said, Kiba vipra, kiba nyasi, sudra kene nai, jay krishna tattva veta, se guru hoy. Whether one is a Brahmin, a sannyasi, or a Shudra, regardless of what he is, he can become a spiritual master if he knows the science of Krishna, regardless of his status in life. Oh no, yeah, okay, Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila 8.128. Anyone completely aware of the science of Krishna, regardless of his status in life, is a guru. Thus, Prahlad Maharaj is a guru in all circumstances. Here, his lordship Vamanadeva also teaches sannyasis and brahmacharis that one should not ask more than necessary. He wanted only 3 paces of land, although Bali Maharaj wanted to give him anything he wanted. The Supreme Personality of Godhead continued. Right, so we understand it's because of his Krishna consciousness, then he's rightly situated. Now, before that, we're looking at people who are nicely situated, or it's very obvious where there's some weakness in it, and we see what the weakness, the effect of it is. Right, in the previous cantos. But here we even are seeing an example of someone where it's not the ideal, but he's still perfectly situated in Krishna consciousness. Right? Because that's the whole principle. Krishna consciousness is the prominent element. The Supreme Personality of Godhead continued. I know that even until now, no one taking birth in your family has been poor-minded or miserly. No one has refused to give charity to Brahmins. Nor after promising to give charity has anyone failed to fulfill his promise. Footnote 10. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes to verse 3. The character of the nisattva, low person, is that he refuses to give. The kripana is a particular kind of nisattva. He promises and then does not give. Yes, so has not been poor-minded or miserly. So poor-minded means he doesn't even want to give. And then miserly means he says he'll give, but he doesn't. Right? So it's the same thing, but just one makes a show and the other doesn't. Right? O King Bali, never in your dynasty has the low-minded king been born, who upon being requested has refused charity to Brahmins in holy places, or a fight to Kshatriyas on a battlefield. And your dynasty is even more glorious due to the presence of Prahlad Maharaj, who is like the beautiful moon in the sky. So he's pointing out things in connection with what he's going to be dealing with him, but also in such a way that they're pleased and they're already moving in the proper direction. So you can say these are you know, techniques of Nityan like this, but at the same time as it's all being done, it's all true and all proper. But what we'll see is that his techniques Krishna uses, you first start off with something that will be agreeable. That even if you're going to say something is not, you first start with what does work. Then you take it into the next stage. So, it was in your dynasty that Hiranyaksha was born. Carrying only his own club, he wandered the globe alone, without assistance to conquer all directions. And no hero he met could rival him. When delivering the earth from the Garbhodak Sea, Lord Vishnu, in his incarnation as a boar, killed Hiranyaksha, who appeared before him. The fight was severe, and the Lord killed Hiranyaksha with great difficulty. Right, so pointing out how great they are in his line, that even their fighting with Vishnu is with great difficulty. Later, as the Lord thought about the uncommon prowess of Hiranyaksha, he felt himself victorious indeed. When Hiranyakashipu heard the news of his brothers being killed, with great anger he went to the residence of Vishnu, the killer of his brother, wanting to kill Lord Vishnu. Seeing Hiranyakashipu coming forward bearing a trident in his hand like personified death, Lord Vishnu, the best of all mystics and the knower of the progress of time, thought as follows: wheresoever I go, Hiranyakashipu will follow me, as death follows all living entities. Therefore it is better for me to enter the core of his heart. For then, because of his power to see only externally, he will not see me. O king of the demons, after Lord Vishnu made this decision, he entered the body of his enemy, Hiranyakashipu, who was running after him with great force. In a subtle body inconceivable to Hiranyakashipu, Lord Vishnu, who was in great anxiety, entered Hiranyakashipu's nostril along with his breath. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti comments to verse 10. Lord Vishnu disappeared and took a very subtle form. Vivigna Chetaha means in great fear. False statements by the Lord can also be true, as in the case of Naham Bakshitavan Amba Sarve Mitya Bisham Bisham Sinaha. My dear mother, I have never eaten dirt. All my friends complaining against me are liars. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.8.32. Lying, fear, greed, lust, and anger are not desirable qualities in the jiva, but become great qualities in the Lord for nourishing rasa and the Lord's affection for his devotees. So that's the whole point, is he has nothing to be afraid of with Hiranyakashipu. Maya herself could kill. Time factor, okay. He's already dead. Right? You know, like that. But the point is for rasa, the Lord does this. Right, the Lord brings us out just to create, because if he's having these feelings and that, then with the devotees there can be interaction. That's the specialness. But as far as, you know, reality goes, then no. So it's only in the pastimes he may have these feelings and that. The word vivigna chetaha, very anxious, is significant. It is not the Lord Vishnu was afraid of Hiranyakashipu. Rather, because of compassion, Lord Vishnu was in anxiety about how to act for his welfare. Right? Because he's just so demoniac. Right? So then, how to act for his betterment. Lord Vamanadev continued. Upon seeing the residents... Wait a minute. How did we get that? How did we do that? Wow! And it flowed so nicely, didn't it?
Always nice. All statements.
Yeah. Wow. Nine. That was impressive. That was a new one. Okay. These qualities provide a method of attaining the Lord by meditation on them and give pleasure even to the Atmaramas. Right? Because something that'll focus on the Lord, that will bring you closer to the Lord. So all these things do that. Srila Prabhupada adds, the Supreme Personality of God is already in the core of everyone's heart. Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam Hridesh Sher Junatishtati, Bhagavad Gita 18.61. Logically, therefore, it was not at all difficult for Lord Vishnu to enter Hiranyakashipu's body. The word vivigna chetaha, very anxious, is significant. It is not that Lord Vishnu was afraid of Hiranyakashipu. Rather, because of compassion, Lord Vishnu was in anxiety about how to act for his welfare. Lord Vamanadeva continued, upon seeing that the residence of Lord Vishnu was vacant, Hiranyakashipu began searching for Lord Vishnu everywhere. Angry at not seeing him, Hiranyakashipu screamed loudly and searched the entire universe, including the surface of the earth, the higher planetary systems, all directions, and all the caves and oceans. But Hiranyakashipu, the great hero, did not see Vishnu anywhere. Footnote 11. Srila Jiva Goswami comments to verse 11 in Bhagavat Sandarbha, Anucheda 74. From the combination of Subra and his wife, Vaikuntha Devi, there appeared the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vaikuntha, along with demigods who were his personal plenary expansions. Just to please the Goddess of Fortune, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vaikuntha, at her request, created another Vaikuntha planet, which is worshipped by everyone. This Vaikuntha was heavenly planet, or the Lord is a predominating deity as a material planet. Hiranyakashipu searched the Lord on this material planet. Because he could go there. Other places he can't go. Unable to see him, Hiranyakashipu said, I have searched the entire universe, but I could not find Vishnu, who has killed my brother. Therefore, he must certainly have gone to that place of which no one returns. In other words, he must now be dead. But the wording he used, it could be the spiritual world, but he is in Tentwas. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur remarks, he has gone to the place from which no one returns, means that Vishnu died out of fear of Hiranyakashipu. He states the Buddhist idea of liberation at death. However, the real meaning is that the Lord went to Vaikuntha from which men do not return. Srila Prabhupada elaborates, atheists generally follow the Bauddha philosophical conclusion that at death everything is finished. Hiranyakashipu, being an atheist, thought this way. Because Lord Vishnu was not visible to him, he thought that the Lord was dead. Even today, many people follow the philosophy that God is dead, that God is never dead. Even the living entity who is part of God never dies. Na jayate mriyate va kadachit. For the soul there is never birth nor death. This is the statement of Bhagavad Gita 2.20. Even the ordinary living entity takes birth, never takes birth or dies. What then is to be said of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the chief of all living entities? He certainly never takes birth or dies. Ajopi san avyayatma, Bhagavad Gita 4.6. Both the Lord and the living entity exist as unborn and inexhaustible personalities. Thus, Hiranyakashipu's conclusion that Vishnu was dead was wrong. As indicated by the words, yato na vartante. And notice that whenever it's warmer, then there's more traffic. And whenever it's colder, there's less. And then when it gets really hot, then there's less also. So. As indicated by the words, yato na vartate puman, there's certainly a spiritual kingdom. And if the living entity goes there, he never returns to this material world. This is also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 4.9. Tyaktva deham punarjanma naitimam eti sorjuna. Materially speaking, every living entity dies. Death is inevitable. But those who are karmis, jnanis, and yogis return to this material world after death, whereas bhaktas do not. Of course, if a bhakta is not completely perfect, he takes birth in the material world again, but in a very exalted position, either in a rich family or a family of the purest Brahmins. Suchinam Srimatam Gehe. Chastu finishes development in spiritual consciousness. Those who have completed the course of Krishna consciousness and are free from material desire return to the abode of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yad gatva na divartante tad dhamma paramam mama. Bhagavad Gita 15.6. Here the same fact is stated, yato nivartate puman. Any person goes back to home, back to Godhead, does not return to this material world. Right, so as Jayan Vijay, so they say so many statements that by common usage then would be thought to be one thing. But if you look at it appropriately for the philosophy, then actually they're saying it's something in glorification of the Lord. We see the same goes. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur does that with what Shishupal says. Takes all the 100 insults and then shows how they're actually glorifying the glorification of the Lord. Lord Vamanadeva continued, Hiranyakashipu's anger against Lord Vishnu persisted until his death. Other people in the bodily concept of life maintain anger only because of false ego and the great influence of ignorance. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, absorption in the enemy was so strong that Hiranyakashipu held this absorption till death, and even against the Lord. Amrito has two meanings. This was caused by his great Kshatriya spirit of heroism. The anger of people in this world is not caused by such absorption in the enemy. That anger is caused by illusion. The conception, I am a hero, in the mind, even the absence of real heroism, makes people think of themselves as heroes, and this conception increases. However, absorption in the enemy is seen only in Hiranyakashipu. Because he was absorbed in the Lord, so that was the glory. But does that make sense? So because of the absorption of the Lord, therefore he thought of him until death, or because of his great Kshatriya spirit. So then if you're looking at it from either one, those two are glorious. But he's saying everybody else, if they maintain that kind of enmity throughout their life, that's only illusion. Because then the point is that person never actually did anything to you. Because it's the conditioning, which is dead matter, and that's interacting with your dead matter. And somehow or another, that dead matter was not pleasing to this dead matter. And so, therefore, it's a very serious matter. Right? Very serious dead matter. Yes. You understand? So that's why I said illusion. But here, because he was thinking of the Lord, then it's a different thing. And then that Kshatriya spirit along with it that would fuel it. So it was all connected to the Lord. Lord,
why would Vamana bring it up?
Because it's a glory. It's in the family. So if you glorify the family, they're Kshatriyas. So, you know, it's all part of the program. You know, it's the etiquette. It's the, you know, so. Lord Vamanadeva continued, your father, Virochana, the son of Prahlad Maharaj, was very affectionate towards Brahmins, although he knew very well that it was the demigods who had come to him in the dress of Brahmanas. At their request, he delivered to them the duration of his life. You also have observed the principles followed by great personalities who are householder Brahmins, by your forefathers and by great heroes who are extremely famous for their exalted activity. So here he's even saying something we might say is negative, but he's saying it in a way that brings out the positive. So that's also a way of being straightforward without actually having a problem. So we see here he's being straightforward, but it's being taken nicely because of the whole mood and etiquette. Same with Mohini Murthy. What she said was exactly straightforward. You know, that she's going to cheat you and this and that and all that, but because the presentation, the etiquette was so nice, very good. So this is, you know, the Lord sets, you know, how to deal in the etiquette and everything nicely, even if you're dealing on these so-called just being practical terms. Still, the etiquette is there, and he's successful.
Mother,
yes.
We haven't heard much of Virochana, but in this
one. Seems that he delivered his life to them, so it didn't seem to go that long. Other than that, I can't tell you anything.
Regarding this clash of conditions, like the devotees are there. So
say a little more loudly. You have competition.
The clash of conditions between the devotees, it happens. So how to deal with that? Because they just are sometimes unable to see each other also.
Yeah, but point is that it's about being Krishna conscious. Because the point is it's not between the two souls, it's between the conditioning. So if we identify with the conditioning, then we have a problem. That's what it says about the illusion. So it's not actually Krishna conscious. You know what I'm saying? Like that. It's just ego. So that's how you deal with it. Just understanding the proper philosophy and then slowly making the adjustment.
Sometimes the material needs also needs to be satisfied. Like particular person has
material needs, but what has that got to do with this clash?
Because the person who is holding post, he is not allowing. He thinks that devotees should be like this. They should be more simple. But another person feels the need that, no, I need this for my prasadam.
Yeah, but that's what community life is about. Right? So basically it's like this. Either a temple president, temple commander, department head will tell you what you're going to eat, or you take up your independence, move out, get married, take up household life, and then your wife will tell you what you're going to eat. So that's your choice. Well... You know what I'm saying? So you say there's needs, but so how are you going to fulfill these needs? So the point is, you don't like temple life, take up grihastha life. Then you can try to work it out however you think you can. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay.
Maharaj, sorry. In this case, it said that because Hiranyakashipu was angry with Vishnu, it was Krishna conscious. But if
it's not favorable, but it's Krishna conscious.
But if a normal person becomes angry with the Lord, it's not Krishna conscious because he doesn't really know the Lord. Is that what it means?
It's not recommended. It means if you want to try that, you can, but it's not recommended. But the point is remembering the Lord no matter what the position, then one is getting purified.
Right.
But the point is since it's not, but the maximum you can get out of it is liberation. But it's only by bhakti then you'll get devotion. So that's what we're saying, is that all these persons that were inimical to the Lord, they got benefit, they all got liberated. But the point is that, so you can imagine the position of the devotees who favorably deal with the Lord. Verses 16 to 29. Lord Vamanadeva's instructions on charity and satisfaction. Lord Vamanadeva continued, O King of the Daityas, here, just go back one more thing. Because you getting what you want to eat is not having to do with anything else. It's whether you're going to get it or not. I can remember a few times it happening here in Mayapur and going on for days. There'd be something just comes up, so you just miss breakfast. So then, but the timing is such, because we ate at 8:30, then I could go over, because I have work over the temple, I could go over and get what's left over from serving the life members at breakfast. Somehow that doesn't work. You go down to the big kitchen, that doesn't work. You know, they just ran out of rice or something. And I've gone through that, and whatever opportunity there is to eat in Mayapur, and none of them worked. And that would go on for days. Right? So what does that mean?
Destiny.
Yeah, it's the Lord. You're going to eat, you're going to eat. You're not going to eat, you're not going to eat. So you're saying it's the temple president, but in actuality it's not. It's just you're not going to eat. You understand? So that's the thing. So it's unnecessary disturbance for something that's not going to happen. Well, at the same time, we had Gurukul boys knowing also that whole thing. They were eating literally 12 to 20 times a day, depending on the expertise of the boys. Right? They also knew when to hit the restaurant, you know, because before it was, you know, people were all gone by 5:36. So at that time, the leftover samosas and everything, if you came at that time, then they could get that. And, you know, they had it down. So they ate all the meals in the Gurukul, everything in the guest house, everything in the big kitchen, and then, you know, the different snacks here and there. Oh, they were good. So they're eating that many times, and I couldn't get to eat once. So it's just up to the Lord how it's going to work. Does that make sense? So therefore, no need to feel that this is unjust, and I need, and I this, and I that, and not that. So unless you're Bengali and they're saying you shouldn't eat rice, okay, then maybe you have something to you know, a ground to stand on. Because that happened once. We've had a few rice riots here in Mayapur. Yeah, I mean literally. So one preacher, you know, from the West, and he decided that they eat rice, they get tired, so they're going to eat chapatis. That way they'll be better out on Sankirtan. Like that. It actually caused a riot. Jagannathakumar had to fly in, discuss the whole thing, and everything like that, got everyone peaceful. And after discussing the whole thing for hours, I mean literally hours, then finally at the end, okay, are there any questions? And then one brahmachari raises his hand and says, yes, you know, because he thinks, okay, now we're moving forward. He says, is there going to be rice for lunch today? Yeah, so except for that, if it's a problem of whether you're going to get rice or not, or if you're in North India, whether you're going to get chapatis or not, or if you're South India, whether you're going to get yogurt or not, then, yeah, then you can say. But if it's other than that, you know, that, you know, like that, then I wouldn't worry about it. Okay? Well, yes. Like that. Sorry?
You still don't have yogurt here.
Yeah, it's not, they just can't get it, right? You know? Yeah. That's all you need, just some yogurt. Yeah. Can't get the yogurt together. Yeah, it's kind of like Bengali's rice and dal. Like it's rice, and if there's some dal, great. Northern Indians, they got chapatis, or they got some dal, they're fine. In South Indians, they got some yogurt and some rice to go with it, great. So, it works. Yeah. Okay, so if it's bigger than that, then don't worry about it. Okay. Verses 16 to 29, Lord Vamanadeva's instructions on charity and satisfaction. Lord Vamanadeva continued, O king of the Daityas, from your majesty who comes from such a noble family and who are able to give charity munificently, I ask only 3 paces of land to the measurement of my steps. Oh, 3 paces of land. Okay, like that. Hiranyakashipu's steps. Yeah, no, he's saying my steps. Srila Prabhupada comments, Lord Vamanadeva wanted 3 paces of land according to the measurement of his footsteps. He did not want more than necessary. But although he pretended to be an ordinary human child, he actually wanted the land comprising the upper, middle, and lower planetary systems. This was just to show the prowess of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Lord Vamanadeva continued, O King, controller of the entire universe, although you are very munificent and are able to give me as much land as I want, I do not want anything from you that is unnecessary. If a learned Brahmin takes charity from others only according to his needs, he does not become entangled in sinful activities. Right? So everything he's discussing is all based on Shastra. Right? And all that. And his perspectives on seeing, you know, Balimars' forefathers and everything, also then according to the Kshatriya code and all these different things like that. Srila Prabhupada comments, A Brahmin or a sannyasi is qualified to ask charity from others, but if he takes more than necessary, he is punishable. No one can use more of the Supreme Lord's property than necessary. Lord Vamanadeva indirectly indicated to Balimaraj that he was occupying more land than he needed. In the material world, all distresses are due to extravagance. Right? Because he had his place down on the lower planetary system on Sutala, but he took the heavenly planets and then control of the whole unit. So it's more than he required. Okay? One acquires money extravagantly and also spends it extravagantly. Such activities are sinful. All property belongs to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and all living beings who are sons of the Supreme Lord have the right to use the Supreme Father's property. But one cannot take more than necessary. This principle should especially be followed by Brahmins and sannyasis who live at the cost of others. Thus, Vamanadeva was an ideal beggar, for he asked only 3 paces of land. So, since they're living at the expense of others, so only what's actually required is what's taken. Right? One doesn't take more, because otherwise then, one, it's how you say, it's going to be sinful because it won't be properly used, and two, it's causing distress for others. Right? So this is the method. Balimar said, O son of a Brahmana, your instructions are as good as those of learned and elderly persons. Nonetheless, you're a boy and your intelligence is insufficient. Thus, you are not prudent in regard to your self-interest. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur comments, O son of a Brahmana, another meaning is, O person who gives gifts in profusion to the Brahmanas, since you are known as affectionate to Brahmanas. You are a boy, and just as other boys are foolish, you do not know your own interest. The other meaning is, you are very intelligent. You know what is necessary for your devotees, since you are affectionate to them and are not aware of your own needs. In that sense, you are a Buddha, unaware. Right? So he only cares about the devotees and doesn't worry about himself. Because at the same time, he doesn't require anything, but that's not the point. Is that in the emotion, he only worries about the others, not himself. Right? And then, in that, he knows nicely how to take care. So it's worrying about due to affection, right? So the relationship is there. It's not just a generic being nice to everybody or that kind of thing. Being complete in yourself, you have no other goal than taking care of your devotee. Because there's nothing for that he requires, so he just takes care of the devotee. And the devotee has no other goal but to take care of the Lord, even though he doesn't need taking care of. Srila Prabhupada comments, The Supreme Personality of Godhead being full in himself, actually has nothing to want for his self-interest. Lord Vamanadeva, therefore, had not gone to Bali Maharaj for his own self-interest. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 5.29, Bhoktaram Yagyatapasam Sarvaloka Maheshwaram. The Lord is the proprietor of all planets, in both the material and spiritual worlds. Why should he be in want of land? Bali Maharaj rightly said that Lord Vamanadeva was not at all prudent in regard to his own personal interests. Lord Vamanadeva had approached Bali not for his personal welfare, but for the welfare of his devotees. Devotees sacrifice all personal interests to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And similarly, the Supreme Lord, although having no personal interests, can do anything for the interests of his devotees. One who is full in himself has no personal interests. And so, one who is full in himself has no personal interests. And one who is full of himself only has personal interests. Right? So, get the wording right. Bali Maharaj continued, I am able to give you an entire island because I am the proprietor of the three divisions of the universe. Right, an entire island means any of the dvipas that are there. So he's talking about a lot of land. So the earth is only 1/9 of one island. Right? So, and then the other islands are even bigger. So he's, I can give you a whole island, or it can be even a whole mandal, like that. It's just however you're taking the definition. You have come to take something from me and have pleased me by your sweet words, but you are asking only 3 paces of land. Therefore, you are not very intelligent. Oh, small boy, one who approaches me to beg something should not have to ask anything more, anywhere. Therefore, if you wish, you may ask of me as much land as will suffice to maintain you according to your needs. So his idea is, you should ask of me how much it'll take to maintain you and never have to beg again. That's his determination. Now, generally you'd see there'd be some Brahmins who will ask that and live like that nicely, and they'd perform their duties, and that's fine. And then you'll have some who, okay, that's what he's giving, he takes that much, how much he needs he keeps, and the rest he gives away. Because there are those who just keep less. So like they get 10,000 cows, they give 10,000 cows to the Brahmins. He may keep, 100 cows and give the rest away to other Brahmins. So in that way then goes on. So in either case, but that's his determination, he gives that kind of charity. What, having given, then the person could maintain themselves for the rest of their life. So that's serious. Serious charity, right? So that's why he's so, a great king, a great, greatly charitable, all these things. So, yes. The personality of Godhead said, my dear king, even the entirety of whatever there may be within the three worlds to satisfy one's senses cannot satisfy a person whose senses are uncontrolled. Right? So then, directly and indirectly, he's giving you the point is, what will I do with so much? Because if my senses aren't controlled, even you give me the whole universe, I won't be satisfied. And so then he's also, that falls to Bali Maharaj. He has the whole universe, but if his senses aren't controlled, he won't be satisfied. Hiranyakashipu was not satisfied. Like we saw before, he got disturbed because he had everything, controlled everything, but he wasn't satisfied. He just became more and more grumpy. Right? Like that. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, Lord Vamana says, you can please me, who am already satisfied, by giving a little. You cannot fully satisfy a person who is unsatisfied. Right? So that's the point. If we're satisfied, then whatever we get, we're satisfied. But if we're not satisfied, doesn't matter how much we get, we'll never be satisfied. So that's why one of the brahminical principles is satisfaction. Because then one is always happy. Yes?
This means that the satisfaction is inherent nature of the person.
It's, you would say, like say for a Brahmin, it would be inherent because previously they've worked on that and therefore developed that, and at the same time as then they maintain it. Because even you have the quality, you still have to maintain it. Even somebody, let's say, is humble, they have to actually maintain that humility. Right? It means it comes naturally, but they actually have to desire that and maintain it. Otherwise, then they can get distracted. Does that work? Because qualities are, see, as you have this knowledge and skills, but then you have the qualities through which they'll be expressed. So there has to be that endeavor to gain those. And having gained them, you maintain them and cultivate them. Just like money. You get money. then the first thing you do is protect the money, right? Then having protected it so it's secure, so you won't lose it, then you augment the money. You increase the money by however means. Then having increased it, now you give in charity. Right? So like that is that you'll work to gain qualities, having got, you'll secure the qualities, then you'll cultivate those qualities, and those qualities will be used for the benefit of others.
It is possible to gain additional qualities which we don't have.
If that wasn't possible, how do you make an antija into a Brahman? Like that. So meaning that the skill that is, you know, that can be, it means to, there's certain qualities that go inherently with. And so within the context of the varna, that you can cultivate what's there in potential and bring it out in nice quality, but if it's not there, you can't do it. So, but on the ashram side, qualities that aren't there, those you can develop. Right? Does that make sense? So when we say someone's a antyaja, we're not specifically talking as much about the varna as we are about the ashram. I mean, it applies to both, but you'll see within antyajas, there's those who are intellectuals, those who are administrators, those who work in economics, those who have arts. But the character is bad, so that you can develop. But let's say someone it has no business sense. He becomes a devotee. It's not that he'll develop any. I mean, if the Lord wants, of course he can, but the general principle, why would he need? Whatever nature he has, that's who will engage in Krishna's service. Right? So that won't change. But your character, that you can change. Because by devotional service, one develops the 26 qualities of a devotee. So all those qualities that a Brahmin have are already included.
So those are possible to develop?
Yes, those are possible by devotional service. But if you're not doing devotional service, then you can only work on them from the material platform. It's mechanical, so that may take you, you know, hundreds of thousands of lifetimes. You know, gradually, if you were determined at it and you continue at it, then you'll gradually develop something. In this life, you continue, next life like this. But that takes great focus and attention. And so, at least in this age, it may not happen. But by devotional service, then all these good qualities can develop, even if we don't have anything. So it's not that you have to have potential. No, the soul is there, so there's potential. Like that. And the soul has some inherent good qualities. I don't remember them now. Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about them, the 7 inherent qualities. And so compassion is one of them. So that's why, you know, all over the world, people, you know, certain unfortunate situations, they naturally feel compassion. That's actually coming from the soul, not from their conditioning. Like that. But by association, by sinful act, that can be covered where you don't see those anymore. So you're taking those, because you're functioning on the platform of the soul, those can be brought out again, uncovered, and you can develop all other qualities that naturally are inherent in devotees. So that's why it says the devotee has all the character of the demigods. We mentioned on that heavenly planets, you know, they're free from lust, they follow all the etiquettes nicely, they deal everything properly. You know, they're situated in goodness and all those things. So all those will naturally come to the devotee. They focus on devotional service. They you know, behave in the, you know, follow the etiquette as recommended. These will all develop with time. You know, how much time depends upon where you started from, but, you know, how focused you are in devotional service, like that. But they will develop. So one doesn't have to worry on that side. Is that okay?
Yes.
It's in Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions it, I think, in the Jiva Dharma, like that. So it's there. You had a question? No? Someone this side? No. Okay. What is an antyaja? Means you have Brahman, you have Kshatriya, you have Vaishya, you have Shudra, and then outside that you have antyaja. That's the general category. Then within antyajas, you have swapachas, chandalas, nishadas, you know, all kinds of.
Below varnasha.
Yeah, below varnasha. Srila Prabhupada elaborates. The material world is an illusory energy to deviate the living entities from the path of self-realization. It's just designed to deviate from the path. Anyone who is in this material world is extremely anxious to get more and more things for sense gratification. Actually, however, the purpose of life is not sense gratification, but self-realization. Therefore, those who are too addicted to sense gratification are advised to practice the mystic yogic system, or Ashtanga yoga system, consisting of yama, niyama, asana, pranayama, pratyahara, and so on. In this way, one can control the senses. The purpose of control... It started yesterday. Somebody decided who's in control of this piece of road here. From this pillar to that pillar. In this way, one can control the senses. The purpose of controlling the senses is to stop one's implication in the cycle of birth and death, as stated by Rishabhdev. When a person considers sense gratification the aim of life, he certainly becomes mad after materialistic living and engages in all kinds of sinful activity. He does not know that due to his past misdeeds, he has already received a body which, although temporary, is the cause of his misery. Actually, the living entity should not have taken on a material body, but he has been awarded the material body for sense gratification. Therefore, I think it not befitting an intelligent man to involve himself again in the activities of sense gratification, by which he perpetually gets material bodies one after another. Right, so we've gotten the material body because of the desire for sense gratification, and that's how it's developed. So therefore, if someone's intelligent, they should act in such a way that they don't get another one. Right? Because the material body's going to give you problems. Right? And Tengu, the spiritual body won't. So that's why that's the recommended body. I'm impressed. They're all visiting the Goshala, or?
Yeah, it's like never ending festival.
Yeah. It's like, you know, in Krishna consciousness, every day is a festival. So, yeah, go practically experience it. Yeah.
I think for them, it's every day festival. For us, it's something else.
Yes.
Yeah. So many visitors here. Yesterday was Adivas.
Oh, okay. Okay. And so it's free now?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Thus, according to Rishabhdev, the human beings in this material world are just like madmen engaged in activities which they should not perform, right? In other words, that whole economic development and everything that's happening on Madison Avenue, actually that's not supposed to be like that, right? As according to Rishabhdev, right? But which they do perform only for sense gratification. That's the only purpose. Right? Such activities are not good because in this way one creates another body for his next life as punishment for his nefarious activities. And as soon as he gets another material body, he is put into repeated suffering in material existence. Therefore, the Vedic culture or Brahminical culture teaches one how to be satisfied with possessing the minimum necessities in life. Right, so according to the individual, what one's nature is, what's minimum for that to work nicely, that's then what one keeps. Right? It's comfortable. Means it's not uncomfortable. So how much you have to add to where the discomfiture stops, but not where, you know, whoopee, like that. Because that's where the problem starts. Right? Yeah.
It's a very fine line.
It's a fine line, yes. That's it. Yeah. Hey, son. To teach this highest culture, Varnashram Dharma is recommended, because that's what it's for. It gives, according to the position, how to function within that and everything like that. The aim of the Varnashram divisions, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra, Brahmacharya, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, and Sannyas, is to train one to control the senses and to be content with the bare necessities, Pratigya. Here Lord Vamanadeva is an ideal brahmachari, refuses Bali Maharaj's offer to give him anything he might want. He says that without contentment, one could not be happy, even if he possesses the property of the entire world and the entire universe. Hetu. In human society, therefore, the Brahminical culture, Kshatriya culture, and Vaishya culture must be maintained, and people must be taught how to be satisfied with only what they need. In modern civilization, there's no such education. Everyone tries to possess more and more, and everyone is dissatisfied and unhappy. The Krishna Consciousness Movement is therefore establishing various farms, especially in America, to show how to be happy and content with minimum necessities of life, and to save time for self-realization, which one can very easily achieve by chanting the Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So the idea of the farms was to make life simple so that there's more time for Krishna consciousness. But if we simply try to work very hard to introduce all the modern amenities into the farm, then we kind of defeat the purpose, because it's even harder to get them out there, so then there's even less time for Krishna consciousness. Lord Vamanadev continued, if I were not satisfied with the three paces of land, then surely I would not be satisfied even with possessing one of the seven islands, consisting of nine varshas. Even if I possessed one island, I would hope to get others. We have heard that although powerful kings like Maharaj Prithu and Maharaj Gaya achieved proprietorship over the seven dweeps, they could not achieve satisfaction or find the end of their ambitions. Udaharna. One should be satisfied with whatever he achieves by his previous destiny. Right, so that's the example. They had the proprietorship over all seven, and they weren't satisfied. So he's saying, you give me one island, and then I'll still want the other six. You know, so it's... Yeah. One should be satisfied with whatever he achieves by his previous destiny, for discontent can never bring happiness. A person who is not self-controlled will not be happy, even with possessing the three worlds. Srila Prabhupada comments to verse 24. If happiness is the ultimate goal of life, one must be satisfied with the position in which he is placed by providence. Right? If you're trying to be happy, then be satisfied with whatever position you're in right now. Because by trying to be happy and you project into the future, if I have this, then I'll be happy, that future never comes. Right? I think it was... Someone explained to me. It was given in terms of defining the popular Mexican phrase mañana, right? So means it's tomorrow, right? Means when will you do it? Tomorrow, but when tomorrow comes, it's today, so tomorrow's the next day. So tomorrow never comes. So that's the full meaning of mañana, right? So here. So if you're saying, I'll be happy when I get this, but you're in the present thinking of the future. But when that time comes, you get that, it's in the present. And so motive passion is in the future. So one's in the mode of passion, one can never be satisfied no matter what one gets. Yes?
It appears that happiness divided into several sections. There's an inner happiness as a devotee, and externally sometimes we are happy, sometimes we aren't. But then for materialists, the inner happiness isn't there.
Yes.
They don't work on it.
No.
And then sometimes they're happy externally or not. So
yes.
How can we balance... You know.
That's why the recommendations there is the varnashram, because that puts you into duties, that gives you particular results, being working at practicing, being satisfied with that, then that will develop that. But because they don't have, there is no set duties, there is no set things, and so therefore people have unlimited desires with limited resource, so then they'll never be satisfied. And also it doesn't work for, as it mentioned before, the madmen, if you're satisfied. Means how you say, you know, Madison Avenue works because people can be made not satisfied. So therefore they'll buy more and more. Does that make sense? So this is actually the solution to it. Is that if you're satisfied with what you have, then you won't you won't acquire more than actually what's necessary. So it's a cultivation, it's a practice. One has to know, one has to practice it, and best one associates with those who also value that, and so then therefore they practice it. Is that what it says? Yeah. Yes.
In this context, Ramadev describes
a little bit.
Describes the satisfaction comes from sense control.
Yes.
And we usually say that for the Prabhu it's sense control, for the ladies it's satisfaction.
So that means they go together.
Yes. Yeah, so
so the point is from one way, if you're satisfied, you control your senses, and if you control your senses, you'll be satisfied. So whichever side you start from. Like that. It works, because then that means if the man is trying to control the senses, then he can be satisfied. The woman is trying to be satisfied, she can control the senses.
Mm.
Right? Does that make sense? Then it works.
Mm.
Yes.
If one is satisfied, then one need not be ambitious.
No, one's not ambitious.
Yeah, but devotees can be ambitious for the pleasure of the Lord.
The point is see the context, right? Mm-hmm. Means if something's about oneself,
mm-hmm.
if you're engaging your senses for yourself, that's sense gratification. Mm-hmm. You're engaging your senses for Krishna, that's devotional mm-hmm. service. You understand? Mm-hmm. So, therefore, if it's applied to the Lord, it's not a problem. Just like we're talking about being satisfied, you know, and then we're talking about how only the devotee can be Atmarama and this and that, like that. But at the same time, when we talk about devotional service, we say the devotee is never satisfied, you know, with his service to the Lord. He always wants more and more. So there it's positive. But you just have to see when it connects to the Lord, then it's fine. But you have to see is that it's actually the Lord's satisfaction that you're after. You know, and that, because otherwise in mixed devotional service, we're after our own satisfaction, that will give us some problems. Right? You know, if we're unaware of it, we're just focusing on Krishna and these things are on the side, then, you know, Krishna will adjust it nicely. But if it's a matter where we actually want like that, then there'll be some problems while we're performing the activity. But devotional service is there, we'll get purified, and then as we go, then those ambitions will be less and less. But the desire to serve Krishna, that will remain or increase. So. Okay, this instruction is also given by Prahlad Maharaj. My dear friends, born of demoniac families, the happiness perceived with reference to the sense objects by contact with the body can be obtained in any form of life, according to one's past fruit of activities. Such happiness is automatically obtained without endeavor, just as we obtain distress. That means it's in any form of life it can be gained. Just like, let's say, one goes to the temple. Okay? Going to the temple, then some are interested in getting attention, right? It means they go there, dress up, they expect people to notice them, right? And so much work is there, so much endeavor, okay? So one's trying to get the attention of the, you know, assembly of Vaishnavas, right? Now, as we know, there's a cat, right? He doesn't dress up at all. He walks into the assembly of the Vaishnavas, he gets their attention. So that's what Prahlad Maharaj means, you know. This can be obtained in any form of life. Right? So
the human being is undressed, he also gets
that also. But would you be able to walk as nonchalantly through the crowd?
Probably not.
Yes. It might not work out as good. Such happiness is automatically attained without endeavor, just as we obtain distress. So you're performing your duties, they're getting happiness and distress, that comes on its own. We don't have to worry about that. We think, no, I'm working for happiness, I'm trying to avoid distress, but they're going to come anyway. Like that. It's not going to change. You know, there's all, oh, what can I do to adjust and this and that. No, it's not. It's the way it is. But we can adjust as us being satisfied in Krishna conscious, then if it's good or bad, it doesn't bother us. Right? This philosophy is perfect in regard to obtaining happiness. Real happiness is described in Bhagavad Gita 6:21. In the spiritually joyous state, one is situated in boundless transcendental happiness and enjoys himself through transcendental senses. Established thus, one never departs from the truth. Right, so being established there, one doesn't switch to something else. Right? So that's the things. We switch to the things within the material. We switch to the material world. We're never satisfied with whatever we're doing. Right? And we're always trying to find something else, something else, something else. But taking up the spiritual truth, that we're fixed in that. Then there's variety within it. It just adds to the already satisfaction that's there. But on the material world, one gets that, one's not satisfied. From that, we go for the variety. So all we do is go from one dissatisfaction to the next. We think, oh, that will make us happy, and we don't. It's just the same. It doesn't change. Like that. Does that make sense? We say it will change, but it doesn't actually. Okay. Does that make sense?
This propensity to want to keep looking for something else, is this trying to be the controller? This dissatisfaction is like...
It means it has the aspects of the controller, but why are you looking? So if it's just to get control of something and that's your satisfaction, then you move on. But you can only enjoy something you control. Does that make sense? If you have a samosa in your hand, you can enjoy it. But if it's on the other side of a piece of glass, you can't enjoy it. Why? Because there's no control. That's why everyone tries to control, because then they can enjoy. Whether they will enjoy or not, that's a whole other thing. But at least there's the, what do you call it? No,
probability,
you could possibly enjoy. It doesn't mean you do, right? You have so many possessions. So in this, I could wear this here and wear that one there. And, you know, if I'm ever on the beach at Bali, I could wear this. And if I'm ever, you know, on the, you know, how you say, the Riviera in France, I could wear that. And then, if it, you know, it could go on and on and on. But will that ever happen? That's another thing.
And if it doesn't, you don't have anything.
That's even worse, right? What's even worse is that you have it and you didn't bring it. Right, you know. Yeah. That's when you go back and give it away in charity, because
that's the sign.
Yeah, that's the sign. Yeah. Yeah. So in other words, that's why you stick to what is your duty. And then within that, whatever comes, then you'll be satisfied. Because trying to go beyond it will not make you satisfied. Going less than that also is not advisable. Does that make sense? One has to perceive happiness by the super senses. The super senses are not the senses of the material elements. Every one of us is a spiritual being, aham brahmasmi. And every one of us is an individual person. Our senses are now covered by material elements. And because of ignorance, we consider the material senses that cover us to be our real senses. The real senses, however, are within the material covering. Dehino smiñyata dehe, Bhagavad Gita 2:13. Within the covering of the material elements are the spiritual senses. Sarvapati vinirmuktam tatparatvena nirmalam, Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila 19:170. When the spiritual senses are uncovered by these senses, we can be happy. Satisfaction of the spiritual senses is thus described. Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhaktir Uchate. When the senses are engaged in devotional service to Rishikesha, then the senses are completely satisfied. Without this superior knowledge of sense gratification, one may try to satisfy his material senses. So her pointing is this: when the senses are covered by the material elements, then the senses actually can't give any satisfaction. Because dead matter contacting dead matter just produces dead matter. You know what I'm saying? It's not going to get anywhere. But on the transcendental platform, because the transcendental senses are coming in contact with Krishna, that then will give satisfaction. Without this superior knowledge of sense gratification, one may try to satisfy his material senses, but happiness will never be possible. One may increase his ambition for sense gratification and even achieve what he desires for the gratification of his senses. But because this is on the material platform, he will never achieve satisfaction and contentment. According to Brahminical culture, one should be content with whatever he obtains without special endeavor, and one should cultivate spiritual consciousness. Then he will be happy. Upanaya. So that's according to Brahminical culture. Without special endeavor means what's the endeavor according to your nature. You make that properly. You give it, you know, your proper endeavor. But what's beyond that, that you don't endeavor for, because endeavoring for that, it's not going to work. So if one has a question, okay, I'm performing my duties, I expect to get a certain result, I'm not getting it, so am I not supposed to be doing this? No, it's your duty. You keep working for it. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like it's for the grihastha to find maintenance. So he makes his effort for that. It's not working out. He doesn't ask. Means by asking, okay, if I am not, I'm not getting any work, so does that mean I shouldn't be getting work? No, it's your duty as a grihastha to get work, so you keep at it. And then whenever it comes, it will come. Or if it never comes, then hey. Does that make sense? So what's prescribed duties, that one continues. So you don't have to worry whether that should be done or not. But what's outside of that, that's what you don't endeavor for. And if you endeavor for that and it doesn't work, then you should take it, okay, I'm not supposed to be doing this. Does that make sense? No?
What about period? Astrological stuff and all this? Because sometimes you do something, it doesn't work. And after a few
But all it is that what is your previous karma is coming to you. All it is that the modes of nature are arranging it, and they're doing it through the nine planets.
That's, what I'm just saying, that you have your prescribed duties, which are usually broad, in a sense. And then you try to do it, it's not successful. You try after some time, it can become successful, or, you know.
Well, it depends upon what it is. If it's eating, then you just keep at it.
Working, earning money, etc.
But then what will you do if you don't do that? Is there going to be satisfaction in the household life that, okay, in this period, we're not going to make any money whether we endeavor or not, so we're going to sit at home and just get into, you know, chant 64 rounds and do all that, and so are we going to be happy with that? So if we are, yes, then you could do it like that. Otherwise, you just keep going, and then just whatever it is supposed to work out, because it can be part of the thing that you made the endeavor, gone through out of austerity. That's why it comes. Right? Well, if you don't do it, you know, so now if you engage in Krishna consciousness, then that's the highest austerity, so then naturally it can come on its own. But then you could also just sit there and keep chanting, and then whatever you need will come. Like that. So, but, you know, if you put it like that. But if you're going to keep at it, then you keep at it, and then at this point, then the things come. But if it's something that's a secondary thing, you know, okay, so whether we, you know, do we get a new house or do we do something like that, but this period's not good for that. So that's not something that it has to be done. Now, you have a place to stay, that's working out, you just keep at that. But I'm saying, but your general everyday kind of things, that you continue, whether it's like that, unless it's very obvious that, you know, does that make sense? So, you know, in other words, you don't go to the hardware store, you know, in Calcutta on Sunday, because it will be closed.
That's why astrology was a part of Brahminical culture, and they knew astrology was a part of Brahminical culture, is a part of Brahminical culture, because they knew when to have children, get married, when to invest, when to, so that they wouldn't waste time.
Yeah. Like that. But even if they didn't worry about that, they would just perform their duties, and then because of the patience and satisfaction, and whenever it happens, it happens. Because whether you work at it or not, it's not going to happen until that time. So that's why Manu makes the point, better to stay at home, you know, if no proper arrangement for marriage is available, than to marry a bozo. The purpose of the Krishna Consciousness Movement is to spread this understanding. People who do not have scientific spiritual knowledge mistakenly think that the members of the Krishna Consciousness Movement are escapists trying to avoid material activities. In fact, however, we are engaged in real activities for obtaining the ultimate happiness in life. One is not trained to satisfy the spiritual senses and continues in material sense gratification, he will never obtain happiness. That is eternal and blissful. Srimad Bhagavatam 5.5.1 therefore recommends, Tapo divyam putraka yena sattvam sudyed as yasmad brahma saukyam tvanantam. One must practice austerity so that his existential position will be purified and he will achieve unlimited blissful life. So that's the point. We're performing our duties, so the austerity that comes along with that, that's being done in connection to Krishna, so it goes towards our developing our devotional life. But otherwise, if we only practice austerity in connection with material, then even we get things, we won't be satisfied and we won't be happy anyway. Does that make sense? So, we're not the escapists, we're the realists. They say we're escapists, but we're realists, and they're illusionists because they think they're not escaping. Or you can say, yes, we're escapists, we're escaping the material world and going back to the spiritual world. Well, then they're, you know, how you say, stayists. They just stay here. Okay. Lord Vamana continued, material existence causes discontent in regard to fulfilling one's lusty desires and achieving more and more money. This is the cause for the continuation of material life, which is full of repeated birth and death. But one who is satisfied by that which is obtained by destiny is fit for liberation from this material existence. A Brahmin who is satisfied with whatever is providentially obtained is increasingly enlightened with spiritual power. But the spiritual potency of a dissatisfied Brahmin decreases, as fire diminishes in potency when the water is sprinkled upon it. Therefore, O King, from you, the best of those who give charity, I ask only 3 paces of land. By such a gift I shall be very pleased. For the way of happiness is to be fully satisfied to receive that which is absolutely needed. Footnote 12. The inner meaning is, quote, I will be successful by taking away everything you possess, end quote. Whatever amount of wealth I need, that much I will accept. Right? I'll take away everything, and how much I need, I'll keep. Okay. Yeah, because 3 paces of land means. See, the problem is he says take away everything you possess. So in 2 steps, he'll take away everything he possesses. Could do it in 1, but he does it in 2. Right? And then the 3rd step, then he becomes a devotee. Sukadeva Goswami continued, when the Supreme Personality of Godhead had thus spoken to Balimars, Balimars smiled and told him, all right, take whatever you like. To confirm his promise to give Vamanadeva the desired land, he then took up his water pot. Understanding Lord Vishnu's purpose, Sukracharya, the best of the learned, immediately spoke as follows to his disciple, who was about to offer everything to Lord Vamanadeva. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains, Sukracharya is called the best of the learned because he would reveal Vamana's identity. Right? So he understood it was the Lord. So in this way, he's the best. Mm-hmm. Yes.
But he already said Balimara. He was a bit late, Sukracharya.
Well, you don't know how it's going to go. You know, they're discussing in this. He's saying, take this, take that, and all that. But then when he sees he's just going on the 3 steps of land, then if Vishnu's doing that, what's the plan? Because he can take unlimited with his 3 steps. Because he says, you know, according to my size. Right? So you're going to take by his size, meaning the size that he's manifest before you. But his size, you know, I mean, the size of Mahavishnu that won't even fit in the universe. You know, even 1 foot won't fit in the universe. Right? The universe comes out of the pores of his skin. So, you know, so that's the point, is he could take the whole thing. That is Sukracharya. So that's why he's called the best of the learned. Because he reveals, here's Vishnu. So someone who can reveal Vishnu, that's considered the best.
Maharaj?
Yes?
Sukracharya has been mentioned as a spiritual master.
Yes.
And in the word-to-word translation, we find that Prabhupada mentions him to be the family priest.
Yes.
So then, is the family priest on that level as a spiritual master, the concept of?
No, but no, you have to understand this. Guru has all these different levels. So of guru, then there's gradation. So one who can give you Krishna consciousness, that's the best of the line of gurus. But otherwise, all these purposes and the position of guru, they can give some benefit for moving forward. So Sukracharya can teach him how to benefit on the material platform by following very nicely what's a recommendation of the Shastras and Karmakanda. That he can do. But to teach him about transcendental, then no. But because of his position, he's able to understand by Krishna's grace that here is Vishnu. So in this way, he becomes the one to reveal Vishnu. So in other words, Vishnu is revealed to the guru. He's the guru, so he revealed. But it wasn't his intention, you know, the element of bhakti and surrender. But you know, still he revealed. So Krishna is very clever. Okay, so end here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jainatai Gaurav Premanandi.